Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, we are on the 5th of December. Advent has begun, so I can definitely talk about Christmas on the air now. I have permission now. And of course, it is a wonderful time of year, a wonderful time of preparation. And family time is something I look forward to most about the Christmas season. But it can also be really stressful. The other day, I was starting to write down the list of all the people I had to get presents for, seeing where the gaps were. And so you get stressed about, when am I going to get the time to get these things? Have I got enough money? How much do I have to spend? Etc. That's just one of the things that you might get stressed about. Well, our next guest is going to give us advice on just handling some of the anxieties and stresses that we feel at Christmas. Life coach Mark Fennell is with me in studio this morning. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So are you stressed about Christmas?
So stressed. No. I mean, to be honest, like when it comes to Christmas, I think we're all going to have a little bit of stress because there's pressure, and there's pressure to, you know, with time frames, with work, it's getting it all done, getting your work done, finishing for the holidays, getting the presents and getting the right thing for people. So there is pressure, but I always say pressure is for tires, right? So I try to convince myself of that when it comes to shopping. But no, like I think the key is when it comes to Christmas is try plan what you can and designate time for what you can straight off the bat, because time is the thing that we run out first of all, and that's what causes the most stress for people. Oh, I don't have time, don't have time. If you've ever been in the shops, you know, around lunchtime on Christmas Eve, because they close around 4 p.m. the manicness that's in the air
and the panic in the eyes
and the
of
panic
some people,
and I mean, I'm talking, you've not seen road rage till you've seen Christmas at the shopping period. It goes absolutely like balubas. But yeah,
my Christmas Eve memory, we used to always go into Dublin City Centre as a family, and my brothers would always be going off last minute to get the presents on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. You know,
they weren't fazed by it at all at the time. You'd get your prezi in a black bag sometimes. Oh, I didn't have time to wrap it, you know. They just kind of got away with it. I'm sure they'd be very different now that they're a little bit older. But getting the presents is one part of it, Mark. The other part is the financial stress.
Exactly.
You know, and there was a story in the papers last week just talking about basically around this time of year, people are spending at least €2,600 this month. So on average, about an extra €900 to €1,000. That's a massive amount of money.
It's a lot of money,
and that's
right?
The average, you know. And when you're listening to the Vox Pops and people chatting, a lot of people saying, "Oh, I've three kids. I spend way more than that." And you're just thinking, "Hang on. Do we really need to put all this financial pressure on ourselves?"
Well, you know, it just so happens I have a couple of tips on how you can kind of streamline your financial kind of, you know, plan for the month of December. First of all, do remember and go back to the whole thing is it's the thought behind the gift that really counts. If you get a gift that is so personable to that person, that is like a thought went into, oh, I really, you know, you're better off spend time an hour extra lying in bed thinking about what to get the person than an hour running around the shops. Because if you spend that time running around the shops, you'll spend more because it's convenient, right? So the first thing is think about the person and go, well, what would they like? Something maybe from their year. You know, really good friends of mine got me an amazing book of places to visit in the world. Now, I genuinely, people said, but it's a book, and I genuinely loved it because I said, that is, I love books, number one, but number two,
and you need to go on more holidays,
and I could do with more holidays, and number two, I was like, you know, that's really unique, different, didn't expect it, complete surprise, but it's something I'm into because I'm like, wow, I love this, you know. So
we need to think about that more, that moment where you go, oh, this person would really like that. I always think, if it's a thing of you saying, oh, I really want this friend to think, wow, Wendy spent loads of money on me, sure they're a good friend,
yeah,
if that's how you think they're going to feel.
It's not a good approach on anything, you know, certainly not relationships or friendships. But what I would say is, so look, think about what would be personal to that person, because that will mean more to them than how much you spent on the thing. That's being honest, right?
Can I say, by the way, to friends listening at the moment, go something on. That is free, for any of your friends with children,
go on.
The best gift you can give them is an IOU babysitting voucher.
Okay.
So there's things that you can do that are very thoughtful.
That
they
is true.
They don't cost a thing.
I'm moving swiftly on. So, absolutely. No, you are true. But there are things that I've actually seen that done before. A person in a car and they had IOUs and like gifts, and they actually created them for this person who had this new child. And they said, look, here's your thing. And in it was babysitting, date nights and different things. But jump back. So personable gift, number one. Number two, go to the ATM, take out the money you want to spend and spend it that way. The Visa, as convenient as it is, you're going to overspend.
You don't want to get that bill then.
Yeah.
You feel like you're not spending it, don't you? Just especially with that tapping business.
Listen, you're better off, I mean, in an ideal world, and I know we can push ourselves at Christmas, but you're better off if you don't have it, don't spend it. So the Visa will make it too easy to spend more than you planned. It's easier to put, you know, 50 quid on a Visa, but when you've got the notes in your hand, you realise the value a little bit more.
So
and it's
make
psychological.
A budget. Do you make a budget?
Absolutely. Make a budget. and take the money out of the wall and stick to that budget. And that is the best advice I give you. It stops you going over because the visa is too convenient and will cause you to overspend. And thirdly, then, when it comes to gifts and it comes to all that kind of stuff, I will say this when it comes to children throughout the year, you know, not to go into kind of, you know, all that kind of stuff, but when people realize the value on stuff and that it is of a value, it's not that you go to the child as a parent, say, for example, and play the purr mouth, right? But a lot of the, I'm not saying, oh, listen, this is going to cost us so much. It's not necessarily that you do that. But I do believe in train up a child in the way they should go. And bringing around, and it's not that you can just do it all of a sudden at Christmas, but throughout the year and so forth, you know, think with the long game. It is sometimes good that, you know, kids see that, you know, things are of value and whatever else have you. Now, you do that in a child-friendly way. You're not going to start telling them how much things cost and how much your mortgage is or whatever else. But it is good to educate children in the value of things and the value of money. You know, I'm not saying that you love money or anything like that. What I'm saying, it's good to train up children in these areas. Now, look, a four-year-old, I'm not talking about a four-year-old, but a 12-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 16-year-old. Because
but in saying that, Mark, when you think of younger kids, like toddlers, three, four, or whatever, you kind of do have to start, as you mean, to go on in
you
a
do.
Way that, you know, be disciplined in that. If every Christmas you're just getting more and more and more, and you know what the sad thing is about the present buying, and I know parents feel it and Santa Claus feels it too, is that time and time again, I don't know if you saw a lovely post going around on Facebook, and it was a teacher saying, when the kids come back to school after the Christmas holidays, they talk about the lovely walk that they had, the games they played, the books their mommy wrote them. They don't mention the presents because they just want to spend time with their mum and dad and their family and their cousins and all that. That's what they want. They want you.
Exactly. And when that was my second point to that facet is that, you know, treat them the value of the money, but treat them the value of what's really important in life. When I was growing up, we never got to, we would do like a list or whatever else. But my parents would always say, look, write down a surprise and see what happens. You know, that kind of way. Let us know what you're thinking, you know, whatever else. But write down a surprise. So we never knew what we were getting. I will say this. It's quality over quantity. If you're focusing on the quantity of gifts, you can create this entitlement, you know, like, oh, I got, you know, when they start going, oh, I got six presents, I got eight presents, you don't want that to kind of create. But when you start the quality and say, oh, I got a really good present or whatever else have you. But ultimately for kids, it's the time, it's the fun and how much we laughed. And that's what they really love. They want the gifts, but that's the stuff they remember. So remember, it's the truth throughout the year. And I'm probably preaching to the choir for a lot of people that are there because you probably noticed already. But really, it's think of the long game and educate people on the value of things and really what's important at Christmas. Because Christmas can get so commercial, as we know. And I'm not complaining about that, but I'm just saying, don't get caught up in the commercialization that your kids get up and the whole family get caught up in it. Focus on ultimately what is important, and it's family, and that's love, and having a good time at Christmas with your family and the loved ones. That's the most important thing.
Do you think we talk enough with our family about these things? Like, for example, you know, we would be saying to our family when it comes to Matthew, our son, and as there's more kind of grandkids and nieces and nephews and cousins, we're kind of saying, look, really, we're either going to end up doing a Chris Kindle for the kids, because it's not fair when there's going to be hordes of them in a few years, you know? Or to say, please, you know, he does not need presents. He does not need this. Please spend a fiver, you know, or whatever. I set a budget with my husband of what we can spend on each other. I will admit we do blow it a little bit, but at least there's some parameters. Do we need to talk to our family and say, why don't we do a Chris Kindle? Or why don't we say there's a cap of 30 euro person or whatever you decide. It could be a tenner.
Yeah, like I think the Kris Kringle is a great idea personally. I mean, you might not do it with your own kids as such, but like
with your family.
Because look, we do it in my family and we do it, we all sit down together and then we exchange, and it's always a bit of fun, it's a bit of laugh, and there might be a funny little present in there or whatever else. You know, it's not done like that, like purely for the financial or practical reasons, although that's a benefit of it, but it's done for because it does create now an experience of everyone's kind of giving gifts to, you know, okay, I'm the person who gets the gift, then they have to give the gift to the person they got, and it goes around the room kind of thing. It's a great experience, it's great fun, and no one is feeling like they're missing out on, oh man, I wish I was getting 10 presents. Well, you're great, yeah, but then you're buying 10 presents as well. So it just makes more quality over quantity is key. Can I mention another anxiety at Christmas? Because I just want, and I'll be real quick on it, right? So one thing that I find in my emails and people who contact me on, you know, Facebook and Instagram, it goes up about this kind of topic this time of year, is social anxiety.
So what's that, the kind of Christmas party?
We're talking about the Christmas party. We're talking about the family party. We're talking about basically groups of larger people that, you know, a body of people that you'd be invited to along to that you may know closely, personally, or maybe not so close at all.
Or there's a mix, or you're, or maybe they're, especially with family, you know, families are complicated, Mark.
Well, this is it. Well, they say, you know, the stats are, I don't know how to get these stats, but anyway, they say the stats is 1 in 5 families will have a fallout at Christmas, which is terrible. But
yeah,
you know,
and you know, my granny used to say, at Christmas, you know, because it's a stressful day, you're trying to get everything right, and there's people around, sometimes there's too much eating, too much drinking going on, that doesn't help. She used to say, no. Don't let the devil try and ruin what's meant to be a happy and blessed day. And it's kind of true. You know, we're meant to come together as a family and to connect, to love one another.
It is. So I have some tips on it, right? Because it's one of those things I think you've got to basically plan in your head, right? If you're going to a group, and we're going to talk about the work party, right? So you're going to a work party. You walk in, you're like sweaty palms. You might have a red rash. You know, some people get the red rash and they get nervous and all sorts. So whatever way you're kind of feel like, oh my goodness, everyone's going to see I'm nervous. You walk into a room of people, whatever amount of people there, you kind of go, okay, I'll find in a quiet corner and hopefully someone will talk to me and I'll have a drink in my hand and I'll just be, you know, just sit in the corner and kind of keep isolated. And, you know, it can be really awkward for some people. Here's a couple of little tips on that one, really, really quickly. First of all, remember, no one thinks more of you than you. So if you're kind of thinking, what do they think of me? Listen, nobody is thinking to that level about you as you are right now. So remember that. Put the focus more on, okay, who can I get to speak to rather than what's that person going to think on me, whether my appearance or whatnot. Put more interest in that. And number two, and this is a great one, icebreakers. Have conversation starters. And the rule is, it can't be about the weather. How cold it was outside.
We're Irish. What are we
or the do? Traffic, right? Everyone has that as an icebreaker, but that runs out of legs pretty quickly.
What's your icebreaker?
So my icebreaker, I find, get an icebreaker of something that you're genuinely interested in, okay? Now, this sounds, you know, I'm very interested in people, and at Christmas I'll generally ask, so what do you do Christmas Day? And I want to know what they're eating, who they're spending time with, what they want for Christmas. And
great,
it starts
with, to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be me, right? So, but I genuinely love Christmas, as you know. So have icebreakers, you know, up your sleeve if we're going into that situation that you can draw on. Number two, meet a friend beforehand, maybe for a bite to eat, that's going to the same party. So like a wingman, someone that you kind of have as well, if you're really kind of, you know, struggling on this one. And remember, repetition. The more you go to these events, the easier they get. The last thing you want to do is not go because of fear. So step out of the boat, go to it, and you'll find that it will get easier over time. It's pretty much it. Because social anxiety, I got an email about it last night, someone really freaking out about an event. He said, have you any tips for me at all? So I said, I'll share them today. So there you go.
Mark, as always, you managed to fit a lot into our brief chat. It's been great. I've been talking to life coach Mark Fennell. As Mark mentioned, lots of people, Mark coaches them, they can get in touch with him. The best thing to do is you can find Mark on Facebook or Instagram. Mark's Happy Place, that is where you will find him. Mark, we shall chat to you again soon.
And happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, you're allowed to say it because it's
I
December.
I am. My tree is up and everything.
Well, it was something we have been talking about earlier on this week is just the importance of youth ministry. So what does that mean? It means us wanting to share our faith with young people. And I was reflecting, you might have heard me chatting about it earlier on in the week, about when I was at Mass on Sunday, right? And this lovely moment, it's a lovely family Mass that I go to and where the kids go up on the altar to say the Our Father, right? And I got really emotional looking at it because A, there was loads of kids of all different ages and stages, but I was praying really fervently at that time, like, Lord, how can we help? How can we encourage these children? How can we bring them on in their journey of faith? And of course, one of the really important ways is youth ministry. Well, our next guest is involved with an upcoming youth ministry event taking place in South Dublin, and it's going to look at that. It's going to say, hey, what are the difficulties facing youth ministry in Ireland today? How can we look at successful youth ministry strategies and bring them into some of our parishes and churches in the country? It's called the Engage Catholic Youth Ministry Conference, and on the line to tell us more, we've Tony Foy, who's the Director of Net Ministries. Tony, good morning to you. Well, it's good to have you on air with us this morning, Tony. So, Tony, first of all, tell us a little bit about the importance of youth ministry.
Well, I suppose I work full-time in youth ministry and I run a program called Net Ministries, along with around about 70 other people, most of whom are volunteers. Now, these are young people mostly who work full-time in youth ministry in Ireland. So we go into parishes and schools all around the country and we tell young people about Jesus. So that your question is the importance of youth ministry. We can see what happens without youth ministry, okay, where young people are not met with the authentic faith, okay? They're no longer where the Mass is at, okay? When I was growing up, I'm in my 40s now at this stage, and when I was growing up, there was a cultural wind that was behind the church which meant that, you know, some people got it and some people didn't. And now the cultural wind is very much against what the church stands for, against what Jesus stands for, which means that people just don't speak the language anymore. They don't speak the language anymore, and they're not getting it. They're not picking it up by osmosis. So we've got to approach things differently, and that's what youth ministry is about, is actually saying, okay, the thing that the church normally does, and I work in a Catholic context, we work, Net Ministries works in a Catholic context, and the things that we normally do are the Mass and the sacraments. And most Catholic kids come through a Catholic education, but when they're through it, 80% of them don't believe that Jesus died and rose again.
So something is going wrong. So there's challenges there where people, young people, don't understand their faith. And I know for me, Tony, and for so many of the young people I've talked to, it wasn't the issues weren't not it wasn't with what the church teaches. It was actually why, the understanding of it, the learning more. And there is a hunger for faith out there. So we need to be able to fill that hunger in the right way. So
absolutely,
where there's
Wendy,
a challenge, there's also an opportunity. So where's the opportunity?
The opportunity is to actually invest in living stones, basically. And this is what the Engage Conference is about, exploring the different options that are out there for Catholic parishes to engage with young people in this country. And it's something I'm very passionate about, obviously, but it's we need to waken up. There are Catholic parents out there. There are Catholic priests out there. And our evangelical brothers and sisters are so much better at this. At actually engaging with young people and handing on the faith.
So we
to
can
them.
Really kind of learn from other Christian traditions and say,
absolutely,
hey, we
absolutely.
Have the same goal. We want to reach out to young people. We want to share our faith. What can we learn from them?
What we can learn is that Jesus is alive, that he wants to be a part of every young person's life. Whenever a young person hears about him and about the authentic faith in a way that they understand, they are very open and will take it on. And I've seen this I'm a father of 7. My eldest is 21, down to 9. I've seen it in their lives, and I've seen it in the lives of their friends. So I've seen it very personally, but I work with this every day with young missionaries who just are on fire and who want to tell other young people about him. And when it's a peer-to-peer, you know, my kids stop listening to me. I'm no longer relevant to teenagers, but they will listen to their peers. And they will listen to stories of what God has done in a young person's life about, you know, their life before they had an encounter with him. And we're very much talking about a real encounter with the living God. And whenever a young person actually has an encounter with him, their lives are different. Everything changes. And we're then faced with a choice, whether to actually follow him or to, you know, seep back into a society or into the culture that's there. And without support and without youth ministry, what happens is people seep back into the culture that's there, which is why we need to explore different ways in a Catholic context for parishes to actually engage in youth ministry. And there are Catholic parents out there and Catholic priests who are scratching their heads and wondering and really frustrated at what's actually happening in the church, and they see their kids without faith. It doesn't have to be that way at all. It doesn't have to be that way. We can actually do something about this. And it doesn't mean that every young person is going to come to faith in your parish, but it means that those who want to, or those who are open, or those who maybe meet a young person or a youth minister or whatever the option that the parish goes for, will actually have faith into the future. And that changes not just their life, it changes their marriage, it changes their children's lives, it changes their wider family circle, it changes so many things for the good.
So Tony, let's say there's someone listening now, perhaps they want to get some sort of a youth ministry going in their parish. They don't know where to start. What are they going to learn at this conference? What topics are going to be looked at?
Well, we're going to be looking at different things that are working within the country. And we're talking at third level. We'll have the chaplain from UCD talking about what's actually happening in the university there. They have focus missionaries actually now on campus within UCD CCO, I believe, have been working for years there. So, and I have a son who's actually in university in University College Dublin. So that's very relevant to him, and he's just come back from 3 years being a missionary with NET in Canada. So he can tap into that. We're looking at more for Engage. We're also looking at the parish level. What are the options there? We'll be talking to youth ministers who are actually working in parishes in the country. And you know what their experience is, and we'll have NET sharing what our experience is working in parishes. The reality is we have options there. for anybody who wants to do something about it. To actually sit and watch our parishes die is no longer an option.
So we got to do something about it, and this is something proactive that people can do. So it's for anybody who's interested in youth ministry in any way, be they working in the area, lay people. Is that right, Tony?
Yes, absolutely.
What do you hope? So let's say I head along to this event, and I just know, I'm agreeing with what you're saying. I think there's people listening now nodding their head saying, yeah, this is important, but I've no experience, or I'm just nervous about where to start. Or I'm saying, there isn't enough young people in my parish. I don't know how to do this without them. What do you hope that someone like me will take away from that event?
Yeah, this is a start, okay? Don't expect to come back and start a youth ministry program as soon as you come back from Engage, okay? This is a start. You get information and get some enthusiasm and get some ideas, okay? And if you do start a youth ministry program, great. But don't feel the pressure of that. Just come along, hear some stories. It may take you a year or two before you actually get something going. But it's in the Catholic context, we tend to put everything on our priests. And, if there's any priests out there listening to this, they'll understand that. They are too busy for this. We just need their, that's okay, go ahead and do that. We just need their say-so, but we may have to do something ourselves, okay? And, it might be organizing a group of young people to go away to a pilgrimage site, possibly Medjugorje. You know, young people love trips away. We organize surfing retreats for young people in Rosnaile and County Donegal. And it's an opportunity for young people of no faith or young people of some faith or, they've been baptized but haven't had any lifelong, going to Mass or whatever or having any church experience. They'll come along to a surfing retreat because it's a bit of crack, it's a bit of fun. And
and it's a non-kind of threatening environment. Okay,
exactly.
A bit of surfing. It's not having to go and pray for 7 hours.
Exactly. And they'll put up with a bit of faith. They'll think in their heads before they go, they'll put up with the faith thing to do the surfing thing. But actually, when they discover the faith thing, they realize, actually, this is actually quite cool. I enjoy this. I enjoy the people that I'm around. They're good people. And there might be something in this God thing.
And that can be the start of planting the little mustard seed.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
All right, so the practical details then about the conference, then, Tony, tell us that.
So it's in the Boylan Centre in Dunleary, which is near the Catholic Church there. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can book tickets online. It's engageyouth.ie. Speaker is David Wells. He's a world-renowned speaker. And Bishop Donald McEwan from Derry Diocese, he's a bishop who's in charge of the youth for the church in Ireland. He's coming along to speak as well. And so great speakers, great lineup. There's going to be music there as well. It's going to be a bit of fun, and also we'll learn something. And it's about changing the culture within the Catholic Church, and that takes time, okay? And we need to get behind our priests, our decision makers, but also say, actually, what we're doing isn't good enough. And we need to challenge the status quo. Guys, there are things that we can do. We have to spend money on this. This is about living stones. This is about people. There's no point in repairing the roof of the church, because the reality is in 20 years we're not going to need the church.
So where are we putting our time and our effort and our resources? Well, Tony, it sounds like it's going to be, please God, a very fruitful day. Thanks so much for joining us on the programme this morning to tell us a little bit about the Engage Catholic Youth Ministry Conference. As Tony mentioned there, it's going to be taking place on the 8th of December. You can get details at engageyouth.ie. There's no point in us moaning about these things and whinging about them if we're not willing to do something about it. Want to help young people with their faith? Well, maybe that's a good conference for you to help. When you think of Advent, or just when you think of December, okay, so the lead up to Christmas, do these words, if I was to say, can you describe it for me? Can you describe this time of year and what it's like for you usually? Would you think of the words hope, love, joy? Are you shaking your head going, no? I think of stress, I think of rushing, I think of overspending, overeating. Well, our Pro Coach series is continuing today, and it's where we chat to people from different Christian traditions and they just share with us their tips on how to grow in faith and grow stronger spiritually. Today, we're talking to Susan Heaney from Red Cross Church in County Wicklow, and we're going to be talking today with Susan about this time, this season of Advent, and the whole idea that actually we're meant to be waiting for something quite special. And in this time of waiting, not rushing and stressing, good things are meant to happen. So how are we going to make sense of that when you maybe can't identify with what I'm saying? Susan's going to help us with that today. Susan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So when you think of your Advent season, do those words come to mind for you? Or what are the things that kind of jump up to describe Advent for you?
Well, they do. I mean, for me, Advent really is a season of waiting. And I think in the world that we live in today, we've actually lost the capacity to wait.
Everything is instant gratification, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. We expect everything to be instant. And even, you know, if we go and we're waiting for a bus or we're waiting for a dart, we have an app that tells us when the next one's due.
We even need a 30-second timer for the traffic lights counting down.
Exactly.
We're getting at 2 feet.
Exactly. So, and I think we're almost conditioned to think that waiting is a negative thing, that we shouldn't wait, that it needs to be quicker, that it needs to be instant. And if we're in a waiting space, it's a bad space to be in. Whereas Advent is really a waiting space that's a really good space to be in. And I think, you know, society or shops and consumerism, I think, have conditioned us to kind of go straight from Halloween to Christmas. And with nothing in between. But actually, we have these 4 weeks of Advent, which are really, really precious time for waiting with God.
How do you make that shift then? Because it's hard not to feel the pressure. And gosh, yeah, I remember being in a shopping centre in early November and all the Christmas trees and everything were up. And even, certainly, I think something that has changed from when I was growing up, when I was a kid, that there is even pressure coming from kids to get the decorations up and everything up as early as possible. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of make an effort to really say, no, hang on, let's bring it back to that time of waiting and expectation?
Well, I think sometimes it can be really, really simple. I think you have to be intentional about it. I think you have to decide, I'm going to do this.
It's not going to happen by itself.
You know, because if you're going to wait, you have to decide to wait. So you have to stop what you're doing to wait. And, you know, I know people are busy and I know we have things to do and people are at work and they have families to look after. But it can be just something as simple as saying, I am going to do this once a week for the next 4 weeks. I'm going to set aside a time, maybe a Sunday afternoon when you're not at work. And, you know, this time of year, everything's getting darker. The nights are getting shorter. It's a dark time of year, and it's a time when we can actually focus on the fact that Jesus came at Christmas, that he's the light of the world. And so why not find a quiet space, sit down, light a candle, and let that be your time to wait with God. And just be intentional about doing it. And even if you only do that once a week for 4 weeks, you'll have done it four times that you wouldn't have done if you hadn't chosen to.
I know Red Cross Church has a fantastic tradition with kids and families. And how do we... It's hard enough, Susan, for us to be intentional for ourselves. I'm thinking of little things. Like I already mentioned the decoration. I certainly remember as a child just... It was 6 o'clock in the morning. I wanted to open the advent calendar to get the chocolate before I'd even have my breakfast. How do we instill that in our kids? And is there little things that we can do together as a family to make this Advent season one of waiting and filled with hope and joy?
Well, I think actually one of the things that you can do is have that candle lighting time as a family. And we actually used to do this with our own children on a Sunday afternoon. We'd make a nice little Sunday tea. We'd bring it into the sitting room. We would then light the candle. We'd get one of those candles that can count down, but you don't have to. We would be intentional about lighting the candle, remembering that we were waiting for Jesus to come, but also remembering that he's actually with us. And I think one of the things that we forget in Advent is, and I think, you know, everyone will get Advent calendars and we get the chocolate and we see Advent as a countdown to Christmas, whereas actually Advent is a season
in
its own right. And yes, it culminates in Christmas, but it's about so much more than Christmas.
What's it about for you?
For me, Advent is, it's recognising that Jesus has already come. I mean, I think when we think about Christmas, we're celebrating the birth of a baby. But in Advent, God wants us to remember that he's actually not a baby anymore. He has already come. The birth of Jesus has already happened. And at Christmas, we celebrate that. But in Advent, I think he wants us to recognise that he's already come, but he is going to come again. And he wants us to look towards him. And not only has he come and he's going to come again, but actually he's with us right now, that he's present. And I think in that waiting time, you know, sometimes we can kind of be so caught up in what we're doing and we're so busy and so stressed and have so much going on in our lives that very often we'll say, God, where are you? What are you doing? You know, why this and why that and why me? And very often I feel like God is sitting over in the corner going, I'm over here. I'm actually sitting over here.
You're rushing around so much you can't see me.
If you would come and sit with me. And God is always present with us, but we are not always present with him.
So how do you make yourself more present? Because again, it's probably, it's habit as well, it's discipline. But I think there's probably a lot of people, Susan, listening who, they're agreeing with what you're saying. Mm. And they'd actually like to rest more, to stop. Mm. But we're kind of almost stuck in I'm harping on about on the radio all the time about this season. Don't be stressed, don't be mm-hmm. Yet of course we all fall down in that way. What's a good starting point for someone who's just trying to start again and say, okay, I want to look at this Advent season in a different way to how I have been looking at it?
I think a good way, we all love to have a cup of coffee, and the way I think of Advent is it's not having an espresso. It's sitting down in a chair with a long, slow latte and having it with
taking
Jesus.
Taking your time.
And taking your time. Just sit in your chair. Go make a cup of coffee. Sit down. Light your candle. Remember that Jesus is with you. And sit and be with him. And if you don't... And I think, for me, what I feel God is saying for us this Advent is... sit with me and allow me to fill you with the things that you need. And I think those four things are hope and peace and joy and love, because there's so much in our world that is hopeless. There's so much around us that drags us down. And yet the Bible reminds us that God has a hope and a future for each one of us. And sit with him and say, will you show me the hope that you have in me for my life? And sometimes it's just about waiting, not talking to him, just waiting and being with him and allowing him to give you those things. Because sometimes we're not very good at receiving. We come to God with our lists of all the things that are wrong and all the things that are going on in our life, or all the prayers that we want to pray for other people. And sometimes he's actually saying, I just want you to sit with me and I want you to receive the things that I have for you. And so, Advent's a good time to do that.
I'm thinking of myself now, picture myself sitting there trying to rest after the baby's gone down, light a candle, all that. Oh, I can see distraction coming in very quickly, Susan. What, you know, especially for those of us who, or people listening who, they're not used to that kind of quiet, prayerful meditation. It's really hard in a noisy world when we just have so much distraction. Would you recommend, you know, would you pray with the scripture? Would you just have a chat? Or where's a good place to just try and, you know, close your ears to all the competing things for your attention, basically?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you know the scriptures, then that's a good place. Do you know, like, so if you're sitting with God and say, I really need your peace today, then, you know, go to Philippians 4, verse 7. The peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. And read that and ask him for his peace. If you're not familiar with the scriptures, God understands whatever we say to him. And if you just sit with your candle and your coffee and say, God, I don't have any peace. I need your peace. That's all you have to say. And you don't have to sit for hours and hours and hours. You know, I think all of us can give 10 or 15 minutes and just. And the thing is, if we want something and are willing to receive it, then God will give it to us. Sometimes we don't have it because we don't ask.
And that's a big part of the prayer, isn't it? Yeah. Well, really lovely reflection and advice today. I've been chatting to Susan Heaney from Red Cross Church in County Wicklow. Thanks, Susan, for being our prayer coach this morning.
You're welcome. Thank
On
you.
The way, we're going to be talking to Ciara Byrne. She's going to be talking about why we shouldn't be buying puppies as Christmas presents. You've heard the phrase for years, a dog is for life, not just for Christmas. Yet it still happens at this time of year. And sadly, come January, you have a lot of dogs ending up in shelters and abandoned and all that sort of stuff. So we'll be chatting about that next. I was definitely one of those kids that pestered my mum and dad for a dog, but they didn't give in. They waited until I was mature enough that I would actually look after this dog. And I think sadly what happens at this time of year, every time of year, even though we know the phrase, and it was quite successful to reducing the number of puppies and kittens and that are bought for Christmas, a dog is for life, not just for Christmas, but still, it still happens every year that people are buying dogs at this time of year. But there's another layer of complexity now where people are buying dogs through websites like Done Deal, and the research shows that the that a huge number of people, 39% I think, don't even visit the puppy before taking it home. I.e., we don't know where these are actually coming from. Is it coming from a puppy farm? Has it been brought into the country? All that sort of stuff. Well, on the line to talk to us a little bit about this topic, we've Ciara Byrne, who's involved with Dogs Trust. Ciara, morning to you. How are you?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, so you have a friend that comes up to you and says, I'm thinking of getting my son or daughter a puppy for Christmas. What's your first reaction? What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, Christmas is the worst time of year to think about taking on a dog. You know, regardless of where you're getting the dog from, Christmas is just notoriously a busy time. You know, there's going to be food around the house, there's going to be decorations. And also the time that you need, especially for if you're getting a young puppy, the time that you need to train that puppy to, you know, get him used to things in a normal fashion and not, you know, have him used to it being a madhouse where there's people, you know, coming and going all the time. So we would really say, we really, really strongly advise people to wait until the new year if you're thinking of getting a dog, whether you're buying one or you're adopting one. Please do wait until the new year.
So what's the kind of things that you should think about, you know, like any big decision in your life, that you should think, what are the things that we need to either, you know, things we need to have in our house or attitude we even need to have before we even, and even, you know, the financial, the cost of it, it costs money to have a dog or a cat to feed them, to look after them, to take them to the vet. What are the things people should think about?
Absolutely. I mean, a dog is, you know, potentially a 13-year commitment. That's the average lifetime of a dog. You know, and when you get a dog, there isn't just the food that you know, the obvious things you think about. You know, if your dog gets sick, you have to bring him to the vet. But there's also regular vet checkups that your dog will need, and vaccines. There's, you know, things for the dog to be for training. There's a whole host of expenses that come with a dog. You know, his bed, his toys. You know, so. You know, there really is over the course of a dog's lifetime. You can expect on average to pay up to 10,000 over the course of the dog's life for your dog. So we really, really strongly advise people to think about that. But I mean, money is only one aspect. There's another really big consideration that people need to have, and that is the time. You really need to have time for a dog. A dog needs to be walked every day. Dog needs to have, you know, someone, it needs company. You know, dogs don't like being left on their own. And that's usually what happens what we see when dogs, sometimes people call in to surrender the dog and they're like, oh, my dog is, you know, driving me mad. He's bored in the house all day on his own. But, you know, you really need to think about these things before you get a dog and think, am I going to have to leave the dog for the whole day while I'm out at work? Or is there someone that can pop in and, you know, pop in on the lunch break and bring him for a walk? Or, you know, will there be people coming and going so that he's not going to be left for 8 to 10 hours every day on his own?
Because no matter what size the dog is, Ciara, it's fair to say that that's just not fair. If there's no one going to be in the house all day, leaving a dog cooped up inside, it's not fair on them.
Absolutely. It's really not fair. And there's a right time to get a dog. And when, you know, when you have the time, when you have the space, when you have the means to get a dog, that's when, you know, you need to really think about it long and hard and think about all the factors that could come into play. You know, even little things that might change in your life, like, are you planning on having a baby in a year? And you need to prepare for that. You know, are you planning on moving house, or are you planning on, you know, is your new landlord going to, you know, accept dogs into the premises? There's loads of factors that need to be just taken into consideration. A little bit of planning involved is what we're asking, and a bit of research as well, researching the breed of dog that suits your lifestyle. It's really, really important. We can't stress that enough.
I remember going back to that time when my parents finally decided, okay, you can get the dog. We were trying to get a rescue dog and found this giant Labrador that a lady couldn't handle anymore, being dragged around the block. And it was a dog. I just wanted it. And my mum and dad had to say, you know, we don't have a big enough garden, all that sort of stuff. And a small King Charles was what worked for us in the end. But you're right. People just don't think about it. We want the instant gratification or whatever. But one of the big campaigns that you're running at the moment, Ciara, is How Is That Doggy in the Window? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this was a campaign that we launched last month, and we do launch campaigns every Christmas just to warn people of the dangers if rushing out to buy a dog, especially coming up to the festive period. So what the title of the campaign is How Is That Doggy in the Window? And really, The reason that we came up with that is because there's so many shop front windows now that breeders are able to use to sell dogs. So there's the internet, there's social media, and there's all the new age places that you would look to now. It's not the traditional pet shops anymore that sell dogs that we have to be careful of. So we want to really highlight the fact that there are so many new age shop fronts that they can use. And behind that, we want people to look behind that to see what is going on behind the scenes. Could this be an irresponsible breeder? There are plenty of great breeders out there.
So what should you be, looking for, Ciara, then, if you are, and let's say Christmas is over, you've really thought about it, you've thought about the needs that you have, the type of dog that would suit. It's all too easy to go online and look at pictures of cute puppies and all that sort of stuff. But what are the kind of red flags that people should have their eyes open for?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things that we say is to meet the puppy more than once before you take it home. And I know you had mentioned that earlier. We had statistics around that, around how many people didn't actually meet their puppy before they went to take it home. So we would advise calling the breeder first and talking to them a little bit and asking them the relevant questions, to find out a little bit more about them. They will want to, a responsible breeder will want to know that the puppy is going to a really good home. So you'll kind of get a feeling, you know, and we would say, well, always follow your gut as well on things like this. If you think that a puppy is coming from a bad breeder or a puppy farm, to just follow your gut and don't take the dog, because even though you're saving that one dog, you're fueling the trade and there's plenty more dogs where they came from, unfortunately. And that's what we want to try and stop. So it's really just to get people thinking about the type of questions to ask. Is the puppy microchipped? Is the puppy vet checked? Is the puppy over 8 weeks old? Things like that. And
if the breeder says there, oh, I'll meet you in such and such a car park, that's not a good sign.
Absolutely not. No, you want to see the puppy. And the most important thing probably over anything else is to see the puppy interacting with his mum and his siblings if they're still there. Sometimes breeders will actually take another dog and kind of say it's the mum or whatever, but you need to make sure that you can see the mum interacting with the pup. And try and see if you can see the home environment that it was raised in, as opposed to, you know, if there's like a shed out the back or something like that. It's just kind of having your eyes open when you go to meet the puppy, and always ask to go home and think about it and come back, because a lot of the time people can just feel sorry for the puppy, and it's really, really hard not to take it while you're down there. So that's why we'd always advise you to go home and think about it, and call the breeder in advance of going down as well, just to ask all those relevant questions so you're not feeling under pressure to take the dog when you get there. And all of those tips and advice and all the red flags to look out for can be seen on our website. If you go to www.dogstrust.ie, and you can see all our information there on the best thing to do to buy a puppy.
Great stuff, Ciara, there. Some really good and practical advice as well for us this morning. Thanks for joining us on Spirit Radio. That's Ciara Byrne there. She is the communications manager from Dogs Trust. As Ciara mentioned there, their website is dogstrust.ie. Maybe in the new year, if you have thought about it and you've been thinking about some of the advice there that Ciara has been giving, perhaps adopting or fostering a dog would be something that would work for you and your family. You can also find out information about that on the Dogs Trust website. Delighted to be chatting to my next guest too. It's very early in the morning for her. She's a singer-songwriter who you will hear often on our playlist. She's been nominated for 7 Dove Awards and has produced a string of successful albums, and she's going to be travelling to Ireland later this month to take part in 2 concerts in Belfast called Ireland in Christmas Praise. It's a lovely time of year, isn't it? With just beautiful Christmas carols. Online to tell us more, we have musician Sarah Groves. Morning, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning, Wendy. I'm doing great.
Well,
thank
it's a
you.
Very, very early morning for you this morning. Where in the world are you and what time is it?
I'm in the Twin Cities, so I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it is 5:45 or something like that.
The early bird will catch the worm for you today, that's for sure, Sarah. So how have you been? What have you been up to in the last little while?
Well, it's been 5 years since I was in the UK. I was in Belfast playing with the New Irish and Jonathan Ray and had just an incredible experience when we did that several years ago. So it's good to be back, and I'm looking forward so much to this experience. I didn't participate in this particular event last time, so I've just been hearing and reading amazing things about it, and I'm excited to be back. I'm going to be coming back with my just my husband and my daughter. My two boys are, my oldest is in college, so he can't miss classes, and then my other son is in a similar spot, and so we decided to just bring Ruby this time, and we're kind of excited about that special trip with her.
It's going to be a nice family time, and of course, it's, you're going to be in Belfast very close to Christmas. Do you like this time of year, Sarah?
I love it. I love it. Yes. I mean, it's unique, and it takes a unique kind of mindset to, I think, navigate it in a way that has meaning, you know, that kind of keeps it rooted in a place that is where you're remembering kind of the big narrative that's happening. But I love it. And I just love time with family. And I love the Christmas music. I love going out, you know, usually right after Thanksgiving, I'm out playing Christmas music every year. And it's very rooting for me to remember this unbelievable story that he leaves this beautiful place to enter suffering that's not his own. And I can't think of a better thing to sing about.
What's your favorite Christmas carol, or what's the music you love singing the most, Sarah?
I have so many, but when I was making the record is actually several years old, but I really became aware of the song "It Came Upon a Midnight Clear," and I had sung that many times but hadn't really tuned into the lyric. But this beautiful thought that the angels had come to announce this goodwill to men, that God's heart is for you, it's not against you, and that they still hover, they still sing. His intention to you is one of kindness and one of friendship, and just how revolutionary that idea is, that our Maker loves us that way.
So tell us a little bit more about the performances in Belfast. What can audiences expect?
Well, I'm participating with the New Irish Orchestra and Choir, and Jonathan Ray has created all these unbelievable arrangements of my songs, and they're singing as well. So I'm just participating on one aspect or one part of the night. I do some songs in the first half and then some songs in the second half. And just there'll be lots of singing together, and I'm just looking forward to it.
Oh, it sounds like it's going to be a lovely gig. And of course, we got a little bit of family time in Belfast as well. Well, thanks so much, Sarah, for getting up bright and early just to give us a little bit of a preview of that concert. And we do wish you a safe and blessed trip when you come and visit Belfast in Northern Ireland. That's Sarah Groves there. And just to let you know the details of that gig, it's called Ireland in Christmas Praise at Belfast Waterfront. It's on the 20th and 21st of December. It sounds like it's going to be a fantastic production with an Irish choir and orchestra, plus the New Irish Youth Choir and special guest soloists, Sarah being one of them. So at some point there'll be over 200 people on stage. It's going to be absolutely amazing. What a lovely way to get in the spirit of Christmas. If you want to find out details, you can go to waterfront.co.uk. I do believe it's nearly sold out, so if you want to get your hands on tickets, you'd need to go to that website soon.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.